June 10th. The last day of school. The last peanut butter and jelly on increasingly stale white bread sandwich. Actually, today it was an open-faced sandwich. I guess the cafeteria has run out of bread, which is as good a reason to end the school year as any. Megan cut her open-faced peanut butter and jelly sandwich into 4 pieces. She offered me one, but I said no. "I'll take her share," Sammy said. "I'm not too proud to beg." "You don't have to beg," Megan said, and gave Sammy 2 pieces. Brian and Jenna got the other pieces. Sammy looked like a pig eating 1.5 sandwiches. After lunch, most everyone went home. There wasn't much point staying in school once the food was gone. I went home, changed into my swimsuit, and went to Miller's Pond. The weather's been warm enough for swimming for a couple weeks, but the pond is still pretty cold. Swimming laps and shivering kept me from thinking about how hungry I was. But when I got out of the pond and dried myself off, I began thinking about the peanut butter and jelly jars. Were there any left? Did the cafeteria run out of bread, but still have peanut butter and jelly stockpiled away? Did the teachers get the leftovers, or the janitors or the cafeteria staff? Did the school board get the peanut butter and jelly? Was there more peanut butter left, or more jelly? Maybe there wasn't any jelly left, just peanut butter. Or maybe there were jars and jars of jelly, but no peanut butter. Maybe there was even a lot of bread left, only they just weren't going to give it to the students. For supper tonight, we had a can of tuna fish and a can of green peas. I couldn't stop thinking of peanut butter and jelly. Summer. Chapter 6. June 11th. Dad called. Or rather, he called and got through. He's been trying to call, he said, several times a day for the past 2 weeks. We all believed him because we've been trying to call him and never get through. It was great to hear his voice. He said he and Lisa were fine and there were no problems with her pregnancy. He said the supermarkets in Springfield were all closed, but the two of them had a fair amount of food in the house. So far, so good. Mom also got a call from Johnny's camp today, and they're still planning on being open. So the plan remains for Johnny to go to camp, and then Mom and I'll drive up there, get him, and she'll drive us to Springfield. Dad asked Matt if he'd be coming also, but Matt said he thought Mom would need him around in August, so he'd be staying home. I know that hurt Dad, even though it's probably true, and Dad probably knows that. Anyway, Dad said maybe Matt could come along for the drive and at least see him and Lisa. We could all have dinner together. For a moment, we forgot that all the restaurants are closed. For a moment, things were normal again. Matt said that sounded like a good plan to him, and Mom said she'd enjoy having the company on the drive home. Johnny asked if Dad had heard anything about the Red Sox. Dad said he thought they were okay, but he really didn't know. I feel like Dad should have known Johnny was going to ask, and he should have been able to answer. He could have lied after all and said they were all fine. Although, knowing what a Yankee fan Johnny is, maybe Dad should have just said Fenway had floated out to sea. June 12th. Peter dropped by this afternoon, bringing us a can of spinach. "I know it's good for me," he said, "but I really can't stand the stuff." Mom laughed, like she used to. "Stay for supper," she said. "I promise I won't serve spinach." "I can't," he said. "I shouldn't be taking time off now, but I needed to escape, if only for an hour." We all sat in the sunroom, happy to have a visitor, but it was obvious Peter wasn't relaxing. Finally, Mom said, "If this is a house call, at least tell us what we're sick with." Peter laughed, but it was the kind of half-hearted laugh I'm used to hearing these days. "You're not sick with anything," he said, "but I did want to tell you to start using Off, or any other kind of insect repellent you might have. And if you still know a place where you can buy some, do. Pay whatever it costs, but get it." "Why?" Johnny asked. I don't think Mom or Matt or I really wanted to know. "I've seen 3 cases of West Nile virus in the past week," Peter replied. "I'm hearing from other doctors that they're seeing cases too. I've heard rumors of malaria. Friend of a friend stories, but that doesn't mean they're not true." "Mosquito-borne illnesses," Matt said. "Exactly," Peter said. "The mosquitoes seem to be happy, even if no one else is." "I know I have some Off left over from last summer," Mom said, "but I don't know how long it'll last. Cover yourself up, Peter said. Wear socks and long-sleeved shirts and pants when you're outside. No perfume, and if you even think you feel a mosquito, swat at it. All of which I'm sure is very good advice, but I still plan on swimming at Miller's Pond. I don't know what I'll do if Mom tries to stop me. June 15th. It rained for the past couple of days. Bad thunderstorms. No blackouts, though. No electricity at all, so no blackouts. This morning, the electricity came on for a few minutes, and when it did, Johnny said, "Hey, it's a black on." This is what passes for humor around here. Actually, it was kind of cozy in the rain. We couldn't go anywhere, so we stayed in and read books and played games and pretended not to worry. It was like being snowed in, only without any snow. But today the sun was shining, and even though the moon glow was disconcerting in the daytime, the sun was still a pleasant relief. No humidity, temperature in the high 80s, just about perfect weather. So without telling Mom, I slipped my bathing suit on, put on jeans and a shirt over it, and went to Miller's Pond. I got there around 10, and there were already a few other people there, taking advantage of the good weather. Dan was among them, and it was great to see him. We swam laps, raced, he won, but not by much, and played water tag with a few other swimmers. It felt like summer vacation. After we got out of the water, we dried ourselves off in the sunlight. It's a little marshy around Miller's Pond, and we had to swat at mosquitoes, but even that felt like summer. Dan and I talked as we laid in the sun. First, we tried to talk about unimportant stuff, but of course these days there isn't much unimportant stuff. "Next year I'll be a senior," he said. "Assuming there's school next year." "Assuming there's a next year." "There'll be a next year," I said. At that moment, it was impossible to think otherwise. Dan grinned. "I notice you're not guaranteeing there'll be a school," he said. "With my luck, there will be," I said, "and my grades from this year'll count." "My parents and I were going to look at some colleges this summer," he said. "Check out some schools on the way to my grandparents. They live in Florida." He paused for a moment. "Lived," he said. "We saw their names on a list." "I'm sorry," I said. "They liked it down there," he said. "They kept real busy. We think it probably happened fast with the first tsunamis. Their place was right on the ocean, so that's probably what happened." "My mother's parents have been dead forever," I said. "Since Mom was a little girl. Her grandparents raised her, right where we live now. My dad's mother is in Las Vegas, and we're pretty sure she's okay." "I try not to think about it," he said. "What'll happen next, I mean. But, of course I do. And I get so angry. I know it's nobody's fault, but the government should have done something." "Like what?" I asked. "It could have warned people," he said. "It could have evacuated people from the coastlines. Even if it turned out to be a false alarm. And there's got to be something they could do about electricity. And gas prices. And food! Somewhere there's got to be supplies of food that aren't getting to us." "I guess I don't think it does much good to be angry," I said. We both swatted at mosquitoes, and suddenly we laughed. It was balletic, swatting in unison. And then Dan said the most amazing thing. "If there is a world," Dan said, "and if there is a school, would you go to the prom with me next year?" "I insist on a corsage," I said, "and a limo." "A stretch," he said, "and orchids." "You in a tux," I said, "me in a formal gown." "We'll be king and queen of the prom," Dan said. "I'd be honored, Your Majesty," I said. Dan bent over and kissed my hand. Our faces met, and we kissed. Really kissed. It was the most romantic moment of my life. And it would have been even more romantic if some little boy hadn't yelped,
"Ooh, kissing, yuck!"
Which ruined the mood. Dan walked me home, and we kissed again at the back door. "It's a date," he said. "I'll see you before then, won't I?" I asked. "The prom won't be for another year." He laughed. "Meet me at the pond tomorrow," he said. "At 10, if it isn't raining." "I will," I said. and we kissed goodbye. It was a completely magical moment. So, naturally, it was spoiled by Johnny. He opened the door, caught a glimpse of Dan, and said, "Mom's on the warpath. Better talk to her." I found Mom in the sunroom.
"Where were you?" she shouted.
"Out," I said. One of the great all-time answers. Out.
"I know that. Where out? What have you been doing?"
"Swimming," I said, "at Miller's Pond, which I intend to keep doing all summer long, so don't give me any lectures about mosquitoes, okay?" I don't think I've ever seen Mom look so angry. For a moment, I actually thought she was going to hit me, which she's never, ever done. I'm not a complete idiot, so I apologized. "I'm sorry," I said. "What exactly did I do wrong?"
"You left here without telling me where you were going or how long you'd be gone," Mom said.
"I didn't realize I had to," I said.
"I've gone out without telling you for years now."
"These are not normal times," she said, but I could see she'd calm down, if only a little.
"I thought you were old enough to realize that." "And I thought I was old enough to go out in broad daylight without it being some kind of crisis," I said.
"Age has nothing to do with it," she said.
"How would you feel if you turned around and couldn't find me and had no idea where I'd gone or why or when I'd be back? Think about that, Miranda. How would you feel?"
So I did think about it, and my stomach clenched up. "I'd be terrified," I admitted. Mom half smiled.
"Good,"
she said. "I'd hate to think you wouldn't miss me."
"Mom, I'm sorry," I said. "The truth is, I was afraid you'd tell me I couldn't go. And I wanted to so much.
So I snuck out. I really am sorry."
"Why would I tell you you couldn't go?" she asked.
"Because of the mosquitoes," I said. "West Nile virus and malaria and all that."
"Oh yeah," Mom said. "All that."
I took a deep breath and waited for Mom to tell me never to leave the house again. But she didn't say anything.
"Well," I said, so she could say no and I could yell at her and we could get into a really bad fight.
"Well, what?" she said.
"Can I go to Miller's Pond?" I asked.
"Of course you can," she said. "I'd love to wrap you and Matt and Johnny up in swaddling clothes and protect you from everything, but I know I can't. You're all entitled to have some fun. For you, that means swimming. For Johnny, it's baseball. And for Matt, it's running."
"What is it for you?" I asked.
"Gardening," Mom said. "Even if my crop is vegetables this year and not flowers. I'm not stopping gardening just because there's a chance I'll get West Nile virus. I don't expect you to stop swimming."
"Were there other people at the pond?"
"Quite a few," I said, "including Dan from my swim team."
"Good," she said. "I'd prefer to think there are people there for safety's sake. Just let me know from now on when you're going."
"I love you," I said. I couldn't remember the last time I'd said that to Mom.
"I love you too, sweetie," she said. "Are you hungry? Would you like some lunch?"
I thought how strange that was, that Mom was asking me if I wanted lunch, not what I wanted for lunch.
"I'm not that hungry," I said. "Maybe I'll have something later."
"All right," she said. "I'll be in the garden if you want me. There are some weeds out there with my name on them." I went to my bedroom and stripped out of my still-damp bathing suit and put on a t-shirt and shorts. I thought about Mom, and about Dan kissing me, and about how hungry I really was, and how long I could go without eating. I thought about mosquitoes, and the prom, and the end of the world. And then I went out and helped Mom with her weeding.
June 16th. Dan and I swam. We also kissed. I liked them both so much. I'm not sure which I prefer.
June 17th. Mom came home from the post office today with a smile on her face. They aren't doing home deliveries anymore, so Mom goes into town a couple of times a week and picks up the mail at the post office. The only mail is letters, which people are writing more of since there's no other way of communicating. Oh, yeah, and bills. The bills never stop. But no junk mail or catalogs. Just letters and bills, and there's no way of knowing how long that'll last. I saw Mom talking to Johnny about something, and then this evening she told us what.
I got a letter from Johnny's baseball camp, she said at supper. Salmon, canned mushrooms and rice. They're opening on schedule. They have enough food for a couple of weeks, and they plan to stay open at least that long. But there's a catch. Catch, Matt said to me. That's baseball talk. I thumbed my nose at him. What's the catch? I asked. The people who own the camp have a farm that adjoins it, Mom said. In addition to playing ball, the boys are going to work at the farm. They'll get fresh milk and eggs and vegetables. Wow, I said, and I meant it. I still think about those two eggs Mrs. Nesbitt brought over. That's great. Congratulations, Johnny. Yeah, it'll be okay, he said. I guess he'd rather just play baseball. I looked at Mom, and she was practically glowing with happiness. For 2 weeks, maybe even longer, Johnny was going to have food, and not just canned stuff. Eggs, and milk, and vegetables. For 2 weeks, there'd be one less person to worry about. No wonder Mom was smiling. June 19th. Father's Day. We tried to reach Dad a few times, but no success. We can still sometimes get through on local calls, but I can't remember the last time we had any luck with long distance. I wonder if Dad was trying to call us, or if his feelings were hurt because we didn't call, or if he even thought about us. Maybe it's for the best that Lisa is pregnant. I know that's dumb. I'll be seeing Dad in a few weeks, spending a month with him and Lisa and Johnny in Springfield. He probably thinks about us as often as we think about him. More, probably. Sometimes a day goes by and I realize I haven't thought about him at all. June 21st. It's dawn and I'm writing now because I just woke up from a nightmare, and it's too late to go back to sleep and too early to get out of bed. The whole day was just one of those days. It's so hot, over 90 every day for the past week, and the nights aren't much cooler. Half the time the electricity comes on in the middle of the night, and it never stays on much more than an hour, so the house barely cools down, even with the central air on. Mom actually got a letter from the electric company last week apologizing for the inconvenience. Mom says that's the first time a utility company has ever apologized to her. The best part of every day is swimming at the pond. When I'm in the water, I feel as though nothing bad has happened. I think about the fish, how they don't know what's going on. Their world is unchanged. Actually, it's probably better now to be a tuna or a sardine or a salmon. Less chance of ending up as somebody's lunch. The mosquitoes are getting worse, or maybe people are just more worried about West Nile, but there are fewer people at the pond. This would be good for Dan and me, except Karen and Emily from the swim team have started swimming at the pond the same time we're there. It makes the swimming more fun, since we race and offer advice and play really vicious games of swim tag. But it makes the after-swimming a lot less fun, since Dan and I can't just escape into the woods for a little private time. I don't know why Karen and Emily are showing up then, if it's a coincidence or if Dan told them that's when we swim. I miss the kissing. I miss the ridiculous sensation of having a boyfriend and being on a date. I wonder if I'll ever have a real date again. Everything's closed. The restaurants and movie theaters and the skating rink. Dan may have his license, but nobody just drives anymore, and he lives on the other end of town. And this is all just dumb, but I guess it's one reason why I had my nightmare. Peter showed up this evening. He brought us a jar of mixed nuts. Mom stared at it like it was a 5-course Thanksgiving dinner. Turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes and string beans and salad and soup and pumpkin pie. Or maybe that's what I thought when I saw the jar. I'm allergic to peanuts, Peter said, almost apologetically. Someone gave me these months ago, and it's been sitting in my cupboard. Mom invited him to stay for dinner, and in his honor, she made quite the feast. She took a can of chicken and put some golden raisins in it, and it almost passed for chicken salad, if you think of chicken salad being canned chicken and golden raisins. She also served beets and string beans with pearl onions. For dessert, we each had a fig and a date. This is as close to a date as I'm getting, I said, and everyone laughed a little too long. When Mom put out the string beans and pearl onions, Johnny asked if it was Christmas. I have to admit, the onions seemed like overkill to me, too. I noticed Mom didn't eat very much of anything, and neither did Peter, although he pretended like it was the best meal he'd ever had. That left more food for Matt and Johnny and me, and we certainly ate it all. Peter always brings death with him, along with spinach or nuts. He said he'd seen 20 cases of West Nile during the week, and 5 deaths from it. He also said 2 people had died from food allergies. They're so hungry they're taking their chances eating foods they're seriously allergic to, he said. He and Mom went outside after supper and sat on the swing. I could hear murmured conversation from them, but I didn't try to eavesdrop. It must be horrible to be a doctor now. Before, Peter cured people. Now they just die. Peter left before sunset. He bikes over, and with the streetlights gone, it's dangerous to be out after dark. Besides, with no electricity, everyone pretty much goes to bed once the sun sets. We're keeping farmer's hours now, Mom says. She's stopped reminding us we can use our flashlights only to get undressed and into bed. We are all starting to sense how important our supply of batteries is. Maybe it was because of the swimming, and maybe it was because of my date joke, but I dreamed that Dan and I were on a real date. He picked me up at the house, and he gave me a corsage, and we got in a car and drove to an amusement park. We had a wonderful time. We rode the merry-go-round and the Ferris wheel, and we were on this amazing roller coaster that went down at 100 miles an hour. Only I wasn't scared. I loved it. And as we flew down, we kissed. It was incredibly exciting. I'm hungry, I said, and the dream shifted and Dan wasn't there anymore. I was in a tent, and it had long tables overloaded with food. There was so much to choose from. Southern fried chicken, and real tuna salad, and pizza, and vegetables and fruit. Oranges the size of grapefruits. Even ice cream. I decided to have a hot dog with all the trimmings. I slathered mustard and ketchup and relish and sauerkraut and chopped onions all over it. I was just about to take a bite when I heard someone say, "You can't eat until you pay." I turned around and saw there was a cashier. I found my pocketbook and went to give her the money when I realized the cashier was Becky. "You can't pay with money," she said. "This is heaven, and you have to die before you can eat the hot dog." I looked around the tent some more. Everyone there was someone I've known who's died, like Mr. Nesbitt, or Grandpa, or Mom's grandparents, or my 7th grade math teacher, Mr. Docks. Angels were serving the food. Even Becky was wearing white and had wings. "I really want the hot dog," I said, "but I don't want to die." "You can't always get what you want," Becky said. "Don't be careless," Mr. Docks said, which was what he always said when he'd hand back a test and I'd made a lot of careless mistakes, which was really pretty funny, since he died when he ran through a red light on Washington Avenue. I remember begging for the hot dog, and Becky taking it away from me and eating it herself. I never wanted anything as much as I wanted that hot dog. I woke up with my throat burning and a taste of bile in my mouth. I don't even like hot dogs all that much. What I'd really love are pancakes, the kind Mom used to make for special occasions. Pancakes with butter and hot maple syrup. Now that I think about it, we have pancake mix and maple syrup. I wonder if we really could have pancakes. I wonder if waking up alive is enough of a special occasion. When Mom gets up, I'll ask her about the pancakes, but not about what constitutes a special occasion. I think Mom wants us to think we'll wake up every morning for years to come. Maybe Mom's right. It's a beautiful sunrise. We are all still alive, and I'm really not ready for heaven. Not as long as I can swim in Miller's Pond and go on make-believe dates with Dan and dream about the possibility of eating pancakes slathered in maple syrup. June 22nd. The best day in ages. For starters, Mom made pancakes. Okay, they weren't pancakes as we all remembered them, but close enough. Water instead of milk, dried egg whites instead of eggs, which made them fluffier and less heavy. No butter, but lots of maple syrup. We loved them. Mom smiled like I haven't seen her smile in weeks. Johnny asked for seconds, and Mom made them for him. For all of us, really, since we ate like pigs. Mom sent Matt to get Mrs. Nesbitt so she got to eat pancakes also. It was amazing not to feel hungry and not to crave more or different. Then, after I'd fully digested, Mom insisted on that, I went to the pond. Dan was already there, and so was Emily, but Karen didn't show up. The day was a little grayish, but still murky and humid and hot, and the water felt great. We swam and raced and had a good time. And then, oh, happy day! Emily had to leave to do something back at her house, so Dan and I were alone. Okay, there were a half dozen other people at the pond, but we didn't know them, so we were alone in that way. We continued to swim for a while longer, and then we got out of the water, toweled off, not the sort of day where you dry yourself off in the sun, and took a little walk through the woods surrounding the pond. It was wonderful. We held hands, we hugged, we kissed, we talked too, and sometimes we didn't do anything, just stood quietly and let the trees and the birds surround us. Underneath everything, I wonder if Dan would even know I was around if things were normal. Sure, he was nice to me at school and at practice sessions, but there's a big difference between saying I have a good crawl stroke and holding me tight in the forest while we kiss. If anybody ever reads this diary, I will absolutely die. Dan walked me back home, but he didn't come in. It was lunchtime, and there's an unspoken understanding that you don't drop in at mealtimes. Peter doesn't seem to understand this, but he always brings food. When I went into the kitchen, there was a strange, pleasant smell that I couldn't quite identify. And then I saw Mom punching a lumpy white thing. She was positively grinning as she punched. "I'm baking bread," she said. The pancakes made me think about just what we have, and I remembered buying yeast. I put it in the fridge, and I forgot about it, but there it was. I'm using water instead of milk, but that's okay. We're going to have fresh baked bread. "You're kidding," I said. It seemed too good to be true. "I have enough yeast for 6 loaves," Mom said. "I'm baking 2 today, 1 for us and a half loaf for Mrs. Nesbit and a half for Peter. As soon as we're finished with our loaf, I'll bake another. There's no point holding off. We'll eat bread for as long as we can. And then I'll check out non-yeast recipes and we'll have something breadish until I run out of flour. I just wish I'd thought of it sooner." "We can save some of it for the fall," I said, "after Johnny and I get back from Springfield." And just because it was that sort of day, as soon as I said it, the phone rang. It's been so long since I heard that sound, I practically had a heart attack. I answered the phone, and it was Dad. Johnny and Matt were at the park, so they didn't get to talk with him, but I did. It was so great hearing his voice. He's fine, and Lisa is fine, and she saw her obstetrician, and the baby is fine. Dad says he tries our number and Grandma's and Lisa's parents 3 times a day. He spoke to Grandma a couple of days ago, and she's fine. Lisa reached her parents about a week ago, and they were okay also. He said he can't wait to see us, and he was sure we'd be able to manage. Springfield hasn't had any food deliveries in the past couple of weeks, but he and Lisa had stocked up on stuff when all this first happened, and they have some friends who've left Springfield to go south and let them have all their canned goods and boxed foods. Besides, he'd heard that the local farmers were planting crops and that some trucks were on the roads again, and things couldn't stay this way forever. Just hearing Dad say all that and smelling bread in the kitchen made me feel a lot more optimistic. Mom was so proud when the loaves came out of the oven. They were golden brown and tasted much better than store-bought bread. Matt biked over to Mrs. Nesbitt's and to Peter's office and gave them their goodies. We had peanut butter and jelly on fresh-baked bread for supper tonight. Open-faced sandwiches because we sliced the bread so thick. Mom says if we keep eating like this, we'll end up fat and malnourished. But I don't care. It was wonderful. Then, because when good things happen, they just keep on happening, we had electricity, and it came on at 7 p.m., a time when we could actually use it. And it stayed on for 3 whole hours. Mom did 3 loads of laundry and got 2 of them dry. I vacuumed the whole house. We ran all the dishes through the dishwasher. We ran the central air and cooled the house off. Just for the hell of it, Matt toasted a slice of bread and we all nibbled on it. I'd forgotten how great toast is, crunchy on the outside and soft on the inside. A couple of days ago, Matt had gone into the attic and brought down a real old black and white TV set with a built-in antenna. Mom says the antennas were called rabbit ears, which I think is pretty silly. With the electricity on, We turned on the TV set and got two stations. We can't get any TV reception on our other sets. Our cable reception is completely gone. Just seeing a picture on TV was exciting. One station was religious. The other station showed reruns of Seinfeld and Friends. Guess which station we watched? Watching sitcoms was like eating toast. 2 months ago, it was so much a part of my life I didn't even notice it. But now it feels like Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy and the Wizard of Oz all rolled into one. We have clean sheets to sleep on, a clean house, clean clothes, clean dishes. We spent the evening laughing. It wasn't 90 degrees in the house when we went to bed. We aren't hungry. We're not worried about Dad. I know what it feels like to be kissed by a boy. If I could, I would relive this day over and over. I can't imagine a more perfect one. June 24th. I'm so angry at Mom, I could scream. And it doesn't help that she's as mad at me as I am at her. The day started out great, too. The sun was shining, perfect swimming weather. There was enough bread left for each of us to have a slice for breakfast. Mom brought in a few strawberries from the garden, and we each had two. I went to the pond, and I didn't even mind that Karen and Emily were there. We swam, we raced, we had fun. I guess they figured out something's going on with Dan and me, because when we got out of the pond, they made themselves scarce. Dan and I took our walk in the woods. When we're together like that, I feel as though everything is going to work out. I like to think I help him feel that way also. Dan walked me home, and we ran into Mom in the driveway. "I'm off to get gas," she said. "Dan, would you like a lift into town?" Dan said yes, and I asked if I could go too. Mom said sure. We'd be picking up Mrs. Nesbitt also. She wanted to go to the library. There are two gas stations in town that still have gas. The way it works is, you get in line and then you prepay. It's $12 a gallon or $35 for 3 gallons. Exact change only and a maximum of 3 gallons. It usually takes about an hour to get the gas, and then you drive to the other gas station and get 3 gallons there. Then, if you have the time and the money, you go back to the first gas station and start all over again. So while Mom is waiting in line, there's plenty of time to go to the library or do anything else you want to do. A lot of times, Mom drops Matt and Johnny off at the park and they find a pickup game of baseball while Mom does the gas lines. But since we were all sure it was going to rain, they decided to skip the trip, so there was room for Mrs. Nesbitt and Dan and me. Mom got into the gas line, and Mrs. Nesbitt, Dan, and I walked over to the library. There's very little that's still open in town, so the library has gotten real popular. Of course, it's not the same way it used to be either. With no electricity, things are pretty dark, and they can't scan the books, so you're on an honor system. 4 books to a customer, and they trust you to return them as soon as you can. We have lots of books at home, but Mom's been urging Matt and Johnny and me to use the library as much as possible. I guess she's afraid it won't stay open that much longer. We all found books to take out. I put Mrs. Nesbitt's and my books in my book bag. Dan and I kissed in the stacks, and then when we left the library, he started walking toward his home, and Mrs. Nesbitt and I started back to the gas station to keep Mom company while she waited. Only, as we were walking, we saw a long line in the elementary school playground. There were maybe 50 people in the line, and we noticed a couple of state troopers standing around, making sure people stayed in place. I ran over to see what was going on. "They're giving away food," a man told me. "One bag per household." I waved Mrs. Nesbitt over and got her a place in the line. "I'm going to get Dan," I told her. "We'll meet you back here." So I ran, and I do mean ran, toward Dan's home. It didn't take me long to find him and explain what was going on. We both ran back to the playground. By the time we got there, Mrs. Nesbitt was about 20 people ahead of us. I knew we couldn't just cut in line and join her, but we yelled so she knew we were there. It wasn't bad in the line, maybe because the troopers saw to it that we behaved ourselves. Any kids who might have been whining played with the slides and swings instead, and it was fun watching them have a good time. We were all excited about getting food, even if we didn't know what exactly to expect. It kind of felt like Christmas shopping. Every now and again, one of the troopers would explain the rules to us. 1 bag per household, all the bags were identical. Make any trouble and no bag. No cost, but a thank you would be appreciated. even when it began to rain, we didn't mind. It was a gentle summertime kind of rain, and since it's so humid, we hoped that the rain would clear things up and the weather would turn nice again. Dan and I held hands and giggled and enjoyed being together. We edged forward, and we cheered when Mrs. Nesbitt finally got into the school. We cheered again when she emerged carrying a bag. We finally got in ourselves. There were other troopers in the school, clearly guarding the bags. It was scary seeing them with real guns. But everyone was very well behaved. When you got to the front of the line, you had to show an ID that had your address on it. Luckily, Dan and I both had our library cards with us. We were each handed a plastic bag and told to leave, which we did. When we walked out, we saw the troopers were telling people not to get in line. The supplies were running out. We found Mrs. Nesbitt standing just outside the playground. "There's rice," she said, "and beans and all kinds of goodies." I was so excited that I flat out kissed Dan right in front of Mrs. Nesbitt. Not that she seemed shocked. Dan gave me a hug and said goodbye. "My mom is going to be so happy," he said, which pretty much summed it up. "Maybe there'll be more," I said. "Maybe this is the start of better times." "Let's hope so," he said. He gave me one more kiss and then he started back to his house. I took Mrs. Nesbitt's bag and we began walking back to the gas station. I couldn't get over how excited Mom was going to be when she saw I was bringing food. It was about a half-mile walk to the gas station, and the gentle rain had become heavy with distant thunderstorms. I told Mrs. Nesbitt I wished I had an umbrella for her, but she just laughed. "I won't melt," she said. When we got to the gas station, we couldn't find Mom's car, which meant she was already on her way to the second gas station. That added another 5 blocks to the walk, and Mrs. Nesbitt and I were drenched by the time we finally found her, but it didn't matter. Rice and beans, and powdered milk and salt, and boxed soup mix, and dehydrated vegetables, and cornflakes, and lime jello. Mom only had a 10-car wait by the time we got there. I was so wet anyway, I volunteered to get out and pay, which I did. It feels so funny to go into the convenience store and see completely empty shelves and signs saying cashier is armed and trained to shoot. I guess Mrs. Nesbitt told Mom all about the food and the line while I was paying for the gas. All I know is Mom was in a great mood before I left the car, and she was very quiet by the time I got back in. I don't know if Mom felt 6 gallons was enough for one day, or if she wanted to get Mrs. Nesbitt home because she was so wet, but we drove straight back and dropped Mrs. Nesbitt off. Any effort Mom might have made to seem social while Mrs. Nesbitt was still in the car ended as soon as it was just the two of us. "What?" I said when we were finally alone. "What did I do this time?" "We'll discuss it inside," she said. Her teeth were so clenched she could have been a ventriloquist. We walked into the kitchen and I flung the book bag and the grocery bag on the table. "I thought you'd be happy," I said. "We have all this food now. What did I do wrong?" "Sometimes I just don't understand you," she said, like I was the mystery creature. "You saw everyone standing in line, and what did you do?" "I got in the line," I said. "Wasn't that what I was supposed to do?" "You left Mrs. Nesbitt and went to get Dan," Mom said. "That seems to be the part you're forgetting." "Right," I said. "I ran to get Dan, and then we got right in the line." "And what if they'd run out of food by the time you got back?" Mom asked. "What would have happened then?" "Then we wouldn't have gotten all this great stuff," I said. "Rice and beans and lime jello. I didn't know they were going to run out of food so soon. Besides, what difference does it make? They didn't run out of the food, and he got food to take home, and so did I, and so did Mrs. Nesbitt. I don't see what you're so mad about." "How often do I have to explain this to you?" Mom asked. "Family is all that matters. Dan has to worry about his family, and you have to worry about yours. And before you even begin to say something about Peter, he's brought us food every time he's come here, and the least I could do is give him some bread in return." I would have brought up Peter, too, if she hadn't. Even I knew better than to say Mrs. Nesbitt wasn't family. "There was enough for all of us," I said. "Pure luck," Mom said. "I will not have Johnny or Matt or you starve because you want to include a friend. This isn't the time for friendships, Miranda. We have to watch out only for ourselves. That's not how you brought us up, I said. Whatever happened to share and share alike? Sharing is a luxury, she said. We can't afford luxuries right now. For a moment, Mom seemed terribly sad instead of angry. I saw an expression in her eyes I remembered from when she and Dad split up. You think we're going to die, I said. Any sadness immediately evaporated, and rage took its place. Don't you ever say that to me again, she yelled. None of us is going to die. I will not allow that to happen. I actually reached out to comfort her. It's okay, Mom, I said. I know you're doing everything you can for us. But Dan and I have something wonderful, like you and Peter. Something special. Otherwise, I never would have told him about the food. But Mom was anything but comforted. There was a look on her face, a look of horror, almost like the way she looked that first night. Are you sleeping with him? She asked. Are you lovers? Mom, I said. Because if you are, you'd better never see him again, she said. I'll forbid you to go to the pond. I won't let you leave this house alone again. Do you understand me? I can't let you risk getting pregnant. She grabbed my shoulders and pulled me to an inch of her face. Do you understand that? I understand, I yelled right back into her face. I understand that you don't trust me. If I don't trust you, I certainly don't trust Dan, she said. The two of you cannot be left alone. I forbid it. Just try to forbid it, I screamed. I love Dan, and he loves me, and nothing you say or do is going to stop us. Go to your room now, Mom said. And don't think about coming out until I tell you to. Now! I didn't need any encouragement. I raced to my room and slammed the door as loud as I could. And then I cried. Big, howling sobs. I'm not Sammy. I'm not an idiot. Sure, I'd love to make love with Dan. I'd love to make love with someone before this whole stupid world ends. But even though I told Mom that Dan and I love each other, I know we don't. Not the kind of love that I want to feel for the first man I make love with. Half the time I can't even figure out what Dan is feeling. I would have thought he'd try to go further with me, but he hasn't. We kiss, we hug, that's it. And there's Mom acting like we're animals in heat. It's so unfair. I haven't seen Sammy or Megan since school ended. Dan's practically the only friend I have left in the world. Even if we aren't lovers, even if we aren't boyfriend and girlfriend, he's still the only person I see who isn't family or Peter. I laugh with him. I talk to him. I care about him. And Mom makes it sound like that's something bad, like I can't have friends anymore, like family's the only thing that matters from now on. If that's how the world is supposed to be, I hope it does end soon. I hate Mom for making me feel this way. I hate Mom for making me feel that for every good day, there have to be 10 or 20 or 100 bad ones. I hate Mom for not trusting me. I hate Mom for making me even more scared. I hate Mom for making me hate her. I hate her. June 25th. Except for going to the bathroom, and I only did that when I thought no one would see me, I stayed in my room all yesterday. I kept the door shut, and in a fit of rebellion even I realized was dumb, I read by flashlight for 4 hours. Matt knocked on my door this morning. Breakfast is ready, he said. I'm never eating again, I said. More food that way for you and Johnny. Matt entered the room and closed the door behind him. Stop being a baby, he said. You made your point. Now go to the kitchen and eat breakfast. You might want to kiss Mom good morning while you're at it. I'm not talking to her until she apologizes, I said. It's funny. I was still angrier than I was hungry. Or maybe I just knew that even after breakfast I'd still be hungry, so what was the point? Matt shook his head. I thought you were more mature than this, he said. I expected better from you. I don't care what you expect, I said, which was a total lie. I care desperately what Matt thinks of me. I didn't do anything wrong. Mom attacked me for absolutely no reason. Why aren't you telling her you expected better from her?
Matt sighed. I wasn't here, he said. I only have Mom's version of what went on.
Did she happen to mention that she was horrible, I asked? That she acted like I was some kind of criminal? Or did she leave that stuff out?
If you mean did she burst into tears and say she felt terrible for all the things she said to you, then the answer is no, Matt said. But she did say how terrible she felt that you were going through all this.
Miranda, Mom is holding on by the skin of her teeth. She has the three of us to worry about and Mrs. Nesbitt.
And you know, Mom, she's worried about Dad, too, and Lisa and her baby, and Peter. She's worried sick about Peter. He's working 12-hour days, 7 days a week, and she has no idea if he's eating anything.
I thought I was going to start crying again, which I didn't want to do.
Mom thinks we're all going to die, I said.
Doesn't she? Do you? Is this all for nothing?
Are we all just going to die?
Mom doesn't think that, and neither do I, Matt said.
I could tell he'd thought about it a lot, and that it wasn't just a glib answer. That's not the same as saying the worst is over, because I don't think it is, and Mom doesn't think so either. If things stay the way they are, then we have a real chance. All the scientists are working on making things better. That bag of food yesterday proves that things are improving.
But this has to be the worst, I said. How could things get any worse than they are now?
Matt grinned. You don't really want me to answer that, do you? He asked. We both laughed as I shook my head.
Mom's more worried about Mrs. Nesbitt than she is about us, Matt said. Mom's asked her to move in with us,
but Mrs. Nesbitt has it in her head that it would be an imposition, which only makes things harder for Mom.
I know Mom doesn't want us to die, I said. I thought really hard about what I wanted to say, so it would come out right. But I think maybe she doesn't want us to live, either. We should just hide in our rooms and not feel anything, and if we get rescued, great. But if we don't, well, maybe we'll live a little longer. If you can call that living.
I know Mom tells you things she doesn't tell me, but am I wrong? Because I really feel that way more and more.
I'd like to be wrong, because it scares me if Mom feels that way. But I don't think I am.
Mom can't guess the future any better than you, or me, or Mrs. O'Leary's cow, Matt said. Horton could be on CNN, assuming there still is a CNN, and have as much of a chance of being right as anybody else.
But she thinks, and I do too, that we're in for some very hard times. Times worse than what we're going through now.
And the way she sees it, the better we take care of ourselves now, the better chance we'll have when things get worse. So, yeah, she probably does seem overprotective right now. I know she's scared to send Johnny off to camp, but she's absolutely determined to do that and not let him know how worried she is. So don't you tell him either.
I won't, I promised.
Mom doesn't have to worry about me. I'm not stupid, Matt.
But I don't want to have to stop feeling.
I really think I'd rather die than stop feeling.
No one's asking that of you, he said.
And Mom doesn't want you to stop swimming or to stop seeing Dan. She's happy when you're happy.
But she wouldn't want Dan to be the only friend you see under any circumstances.
Why don't you visit Megan or Sammy? I could use some good Sammy stories.
The truth of the matter is, I hardly even think about Sammy or Megan. It's like they're a part of the world that's already ended for me. But since I'd just finished a big speech about feelings, I didn't think I could confess that. So I nodded and told Matt I'd get dressed and make things up with Mom. But when I saw Mom in the kitchen, I didn't feel like getting all kissy-kissy with her. And I could see she wasn't all that eager to get kissy-kissy with me either. She and Johnny were both sitting at the table, looking kind of glum. Without even thinking about it, I said, "Johnny, you want to go to Miller's Pond with me this morning?" Johnny's face lit up, and I could see I'd said the right thing as far as Mom was concerned.
"That'd be great," he said.
I have no idea why Johnny hasn't just invited himself along. It's not like I own Miller's Pond. But Johnny's been playing baseball, or at least practicing with Matt, and Matt's been running when he hasn't been playing ball. Maybe they figured swimming was mine, and they'd keep away from it. Johnny put his trunks on under his jeans while I was eating breakfast, and as soon as we were both ready, we walked together to the pond. With my luck, of course Emily and Karen weren't there, so Dan and I lost good alone time. But it was worth it to see how happy Johnny was in the water. There were a couple of kids he knew from middle school, and the three of them played together. Then we all swam together, played water polo, and imitation relay races. It was another one of those hot, sunny days, so we all laid around after swimming and let the sun dry us off. Dan, it turns out, is a big Phillies fan, and he and Johnny talked baseball, which made Johnny even happier. I've been so involved in my own problems, I haven't thought much about what all this is doing to Johnny. Until I saw how excited he was talking with Dan about all-time great second baseman, I hadn't realized just how bored he's been. He's had Matt, and Matt's been great with him. But this time of year when Johnny isn't playing ball, he's watching it on TV, or following it on the internet. Johnny's passionate about baseball the way I used to be about skating. I'm really glad his baseball camp is going to be open. He deserves a couple of weeks of doing what he loves best. I guess because Johnny was with me, Dan didn't walk me home. That was okay, because it gave me more of a chance to talk with Johnny. "I've been thinking about something," he said, and I could tell it was something really important to him. Right away, that meant it wasn't anything good. "You know how I'm planning on playing second for the Yankees?" Since Johnny's been planning on that since birth, I wasn't exactly surprised to hear it, so I just nodded. "I know Mom's doing her best," Johnny said, "but I don't think I'm eating a well-balanced diet. Protein and stuff like that. I'm 5'5", and I don't know how much taller I can get if I don't start eating hamburgers and roast beef." "We're eating better than lots of other people," I said. "Better than people here," Johnny said. "But what if there are 13-year-old guys in Japan or the Dominican Republic who are eating hamburgers and who are growing? I don't see how I can reach 6 feet on canned tuna. What if I end up 5'6"? I would have laughed, except he looked so serious. Besides, I knew Matt wouldn't have laughed. Matt doesn't laugh at my idiotic questions. "You taking your vitamins?" I asked. Johnny nodded. "Well, they'll help," I said. "Look, Johnny, I don't know what things are going to be like tomorrow, let alone years from now. Even if things get back to normal and baseball is just like it is now, like it was last year, I mean, players years from now may all be shorter than they used to be. Or maybe there'll be less competition for you because, well, because there just won't be that many second basemen around. I don't think things are great in the Dominican Republic or Japan. The guys your age may not grow to 6 feet either, or have the time to work on their baseball the way you do."
"You mean you think they're all dead," Johnny said.
"Not exactly," I said, suddenly appreciating how well Matt's been handling me lately. "What I think is, the whole world is going through rough times now, not just Pennsylvania. And there are probably boys in the Dominican Republic and in Japan who are worrying the same way you are. Only I don't know if they have vitamins or canned tuna. And I do know one thing. It's like Dad always says, the only way you can be the best at something is to be the best you can be. If you're the best second baseman you can be, you stand as good a chance as anyone at playing second for the Yankees."
"Do you hate all this?" Johnny asked.
"Yes," I said, "and I miss hamburgers too." When we got home, I saw Mom in the kitchen, flour and yeast and measuring cups all spread out on the counter. The kitchen must have been 100 degrees between how hot it was outside and the oven being on. "Can I help, Mom?" I asked. "I'd like to learn how to bake bread." Mom smiled at me. Really smiled. Smiled like I was her long-lost daughter, the good one who she thought was gone forever.
"I'd like that," she said.
So we baked and sweated together. I like punching the dough. I told myself it was the moon and punched it senseless.
Chapter 7. July 2nd. Mom drove Johnny to baseball camp today. She came back really excited because she found a gas station near Liberty that was selling 5 gallons of gas at a time for $75. That's more than it costs here, but the stations here are down to a 2-gallon maximum, and Mom said it was worth the extra money to get so much gas at once. One of the things I don't ask Mom is how much longer her cash is going to last.
Then again, the only thing left to spend it on is gas, so I guess it doesn't much matter. The temperature was near 100, and we haven't had electricity for the past 3 days. Matt decided it was time to chop down a tree. He sent me out to gather kindling. That seems dumb to me, but at least in the woods there was shade. And it's a lot easier to gather kindling than it is to chop a tree. After I'd gathered 4 bags, I brought them to the house. Matt was still working on the tree. At the rate he was going, it's going to take a week to chop down that tree. I asked him if he wanted any help, and he said no. But I didn't feel like I could just sit someplace reading while he was working. And frankly, there wasn't that much I could do around the house. I weeded the vegetable garden, since Mom does that daily, and I washed the dishes, and then, just to prove I was good for something, I scrubbed the bathrooms and washed the kitchen floor. Matt came in and took a drink of water. "Very impressive," he said. "Got any other plans for the day?" I was a little scared to admit I didn't, so I just mumbled. "Why don't you visit Sammy and Megan?" he asked. "Have you seen them since school ended?" I hadn't. Of course, they haven't come to visit me either, but just to keep Matt from harping on it, I decided to pay calls. It felt very Jane Austen-y to do that. None of her heroines had phones or computers, and nowadays neither do I. It took 15 minutes to walk to Sammy's, and I sweated the whole way. I wasn't too happy when I got there to find no one was home. For a moment, I wondered if her whole family had packed up and left. Some families are doing that, moving down south because things are supposed to be better there. But there was laundry on the clothesline. Funny to think of Sammy's mom hanging clothes on the line. Of course, that's what we're doing now, but Sammy's mother was never exactly the domestic type. There didn't seem any point in staying around waiting for someone to show up, so I walked over to Megan's. I knocked on the door, and Megan's mom opened the door right away. She looked beyond happy to see me. It gave me a deja vu feeling. It was the same kind of look I used to get from Becky's mom. "Miranda," Mrs. Wayne said, and she pulled me into the house. "Megan will be so glad to see you." "Megan, Miranda's here." "Is she in her room?" I asked. Mrs. Wayne nodded. "She hardly leaves it," she said, "except to go to church." "I'm so glad you're here, Miranda. See if you can talk some sense into her. Please." "I'll do my best," I said, but we both knew nothing I could say was going to change Megan's mind. I've never been able to change Megan's mind about anything. Megan opened the door to her bedroom, and she seemed genuinely happy to see me. I checked her out carefully. She's lost some weight, but not as much as I'd been afraid. What did scare me, though, was how she glowed. She positively radiated inner joy. No way that makes sense these days. "How are you?" she asked, and she seemed genuinely interested in everything I told her. And I told her most everything, about how Dan and I were seeing each other almost every day, and how Johnny was on his way to camp, and how Matt was chopping a tree. I didn't tell her about what food we still had, because you don't talk about that anymore. Once we finished with me, I asked her how she was. If anything, she got even more radiant. She was practically radioactive. "Oh, Miranda," she said, "if only you could know the true happiness I'm feeling." "I'm glad you're happy," I said, although frankly, I thought she was crazy. And bad as things are, I'm still not glad when people are crazy. "You could be happy too, if you only embraced God," she said. "Admit your sins, cast out Satan, and offer your heart to God." "Are you getting to church much?" I asked. Megan had listened to me rattle on about Dan. The least I could do is listen to her rattle on about Reverend Marshall. "I go every day," Megan replied. "Mom knows I go every morning, but she gets angry at me if I don't come back by afternoon. And I don't want Mom to be angry, because I want to see her in heaven. Sometimes, though, at night, when she's asleep, I slip out and go back. No matter when I go, the Reverend is there. He's praying day and night for all us sinners." Somehow, I doubt he's praying for me, and if he is, I'm not sure I want him to. But at least if Megan was going to church, she was getting out of the house. Still, some questions had to be asked. "So, are you eating anymore?" I asked. Funny how "any more" can mean two different things.
I eat, Miranda, Megan said, and she smiled at me like I was an idiot child. It would be suicide if I stopped eating altogether.